Many parents will know the struggle of getting children off devices, but our guest now has plenty of ideas. Rachel Clare is the author of Play Wild, Nature Craft Projects for Tamariki. And it's a how-to guide for getting kids into nature and encouraging their creativity. As Rachel points out in the book, you don't have to have your own garden to be able to do them. Nature is everywhere, and so are the materials. Kia ora, Rachel. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Kia ora, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
It's a pretty book. It's really nicely laid out, beautiful, inspiring pictures, but lots of breakouts and lots of how-tos. What was the impetus for doing this?
Well, I really wanted to make the kind of book that I loved as a kid. So you'll remember the Wombles, Catherine. We had this Womble book called Wombles Make Good Use of Rubbish Book. So, you know, the Wombles were like the OG upcyclers, really, weren't they? And I, inspired by my Womble book as a kid, I remember trying to make chip bowls out of kind of some dried up grapefruit that I then used my little watercolour set to paint patterns on. And, you know, the whole result wasn't particularly palatable. But books like that really impacted on me. And I also had a really incredible grandmother who did a lot of wonderful nature activities with me outside. So she grew passion fruit and carved our initials in them. And, you know, one year I made a beekeeping costume out of a net curtain. We didn't have bees. And then I wandered around outside, you know, pretending that I was a beekeeper. So I just wanted to recreate that experience for kids, but also have some really easy activities for parents that didn't require items that you had to go out and buy.
You've just reminded me of the joy of the Wombles, actually.
I think you should play the song on the way out.
I think we'll get it up later. It's wonderful. I don't know if you've seen it's all over social media. You know how they have the underground overground signs in the UK telling you where the subway is and where the
overground. Oh, yeah.
And someone went and stuck a Wombling Free under it. Underground Wombling Free. It's a very warming memory of a time and a place. But to your point, they were ahead of time in their messaging, weren't they?
They were. I guess they were part of, I mean, it was a book that was written in the 60s, but then they had the TV show and it was really part of that 70s movement to get back to nature.
So, it's reminiscent of your childhood as well. I guess the big thing was that when you were a kid and the Wombles were a thing, we did not have those devices. The things that we talked into were attached to the wall with a bit of wire and you had people breathing down your neck because they wanted to get onto it next. And we might have had a box in the corner with, in our case, one channel and then it became two, whoop-de-doo.
I know.
This is the challenge now. Children are just living, they're digital natives, they're almost born with one of those devices stuck on their hands. And what's your advice for trying to get those neurons firing over something other than a device? What are some of the ways of starting it happening?
Well, I have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, so the struggle with screens is real. And they're everywhere. You know, they can be playing a video game and then you're like, get off your device. And then they're on a phone. And it is really just making them go outside to a degree. I would say that kids need take-in time, even 14-year-olds do, where you might say, in an hour, you're getting off your device and you're going to go and do something outside. Within that, I think it's really important that we don't, you know, it's not... they're not oppositional things, like it's like screen time is bad, nature is good. I think it's that we need that screen time as part of our lives and we need green time, so time spent outside. And so I think some ways you can do that is scheduling it. I think younger children actually need to be out there doing it with their parents, so we need to get off our devices too. We'll take a break from work if we can and go outside into our backyards and explore with them. Older children, you know, you can get them outside exploring on their own. And there's lots of activities in the book where you can get kids started and then they can just go for it.
It's that old phrase again from that era, you know, go outside and play.
And that was absolutely.
And we took it literally. But to your point, our habits, very strong modelling, our habits have changed too. And developing habits at a young age is incredibly beneficial, you know, whether it's a love of water or a love of nature or love of the outdoors or camping or whatever. In parenting, you are helping lay that foundation. And even if it disappears for a time, it never completely goes. So let's talk about some of the really fun stuff. Shall we do it sort of chronologically, age-wise? What's some of the wonderful stuff you do outdoors? Actually, let's start with wild art, which is where you do.
Okay, cool. So there's a really cool activity there, which is all you need is nature. No materials from inside the house. You just go outside. And these, I start with petal pictures. So that is gathering what you can find. So like petals and leaves and shells. I always bring shells home from the beach. Pebbles. And I've made a rainbow out of flowers. But you can also, you know, create a beautiful pattern. And this is actually where screen time can be a good start, because if you go online, there are amazing nature pictures people make, like mermaids and rabbits. So that can be a good way if you say to your kid, oh, let's look at what we can see online, and now let's go outside and make our own picture, our own petal picture with what we can find. So I always think it's nice to use screen time as a hook in a way.
As long as you put it down, because you don't want to be in that situation where they're outside with their phones all the time.
No.
And I know phones are amazing. You can listen to a bird call and this and that, but they just also intervene. You want them to stay inside. This is educational as well. You're explaining the colours of the rainbow, or the rules of the rainbow, really, always in the same order. The spectrum, of course, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. You've got the little wordplay for that. I love this too, this little miniature garden, which, and again, this is to the point. These things don't need a big space with little hideaways. Wonderful if you've got that. But the miniature garden is just a brilliant idea. And what are some of the components of that you might go and gather? It might actually involve a trip to go and do some gathering, right?
Yeah, which is, you know, you can go for a forage. I really wanted to develop a foraging mindset in kids. So you can go for a forage around your garden or even go to the park. You can't pick the flowers in the park, but you can pick leaves and twigs and things lying on the ground and get shells from the beach. So you just need a flat surface. You could use an old meat tray. You want to make the activity last longer, use a big roasting dish. And then you fill it up with sand or a bit of dirt, spritz it down so it's nice and firm, and then you can start creating your landscape on top of that. This is very much the old sand saucer idea, which I'm sure lots of listeners are familiar with, you know, where people used to create sand saucers for school competitions. So then you create, you know, you create your miniature landscape, so you can create paths out of shells. I love moss, so I sneak moss off the top of my neighbour's carport roof regularly. No, so, you know, foraging can be quite, you know, broad definition. So I use moss, and then you can pick flowers, and it's also really great for younger kids' fine motor skills if they're doing things like breaking up big flowers into little petals.
But they're also, there's that, and they're also looking closely at things and noticing things as well. And while you're out there, you'll find all the bugs and worms and everything else that's going on. I love the way you've got here. Feel free to incorporate small toys into your world as well. Perhaps you could create a scene out of your favourite book or show. Pressed flowers and making a comeback. That's lovely.
Yes, and that was really interesting to me because I've got a method in there for hot pressing flowers. And so my 14-year-old wasn't too interested in many of the activities in this book because, you know, he's a bit older now. But I was hot pressing these flowers with the iron, and they smell really good as the plants release their sugars. And he walked past and picked them up and was like, they smell really good. So, you know, I was intrigued by the fact that he noticed. But yes, pressed flowers are so much fun. You can do it the traditional way by getting flat flowers and leaves and putting them in the pages of a book. Or I have the hot press flower method, which is fun too. And, you know, they're great for, you know, you can paste them onto bookmarks or rocks. They make great presents. And there's a cool upcycling activity further on where you can get a jar, like an old peanut butter jar or something, out of your recycling bin. And then you can paste the flowers onto those. And then you put a tea light candle in. Or you could do some of those battery-powered lights and take it outside at night. They're very pretty.
Very fancy, the fairy light jars that are homemade. Also, some of the art, the pine cones, the pine cone riru, for example.
Yes, yeah, that's a very cute activity.
Are they little walnut? What are the eyes?
The eyes are like eucalyptus pods that we've sliced.
Ah.
Yeah. So kids might need an adult's help with that. Or you can use acorn caps. But it's really just about, like a womble, making good use of the things that you find.
Well, there is. There's homemade paintbrushes, natural paintbrushes. This is great fun. What are you making them out of?
I really wanted to make mine out of natives. I have quite a few native plants on my property. So, you know, I've got kānuka, oi oi, which is that reed, rimu, toi toi, manuka. And that was quite fun. And I trialled this activity with some preschoolers and they loved it. Like, they completely got it, you know. And you're creating kind of naive art. You're not going to do some really detailed masterpiece with these. It's about having fun with the brushes and experiencing the different textures. And they've got kind of a cute witchy look, don't you think?
Indeed. What's hammer art? It involves a hammer, which is fun. What are we doing?
Oh, hammer art's great. And it's loud, which lots of kids would love. And also, you know, who doesn't like using a hammer? So that you want to use plants that have quite a lot of oil in them, like primulas or nasturtiums. And pansies work for this as well. So you get your flower and you put it face down on a bit of paper. You cover it with some baking paper and then you hammer it. So you've got to hammer it for quite a while and eventually you get an imprint of your flower or leaf onto your paper and then, you know, you could frame it or make a card. But that one, you know, you'll have to experiment with different flowers because it doesn't work with everything, but I have given suggestions of flowers that it works well with.
Some of these are so clever. The stained glass petal window, how do you stick it to the stained glass? I mean, that's stunning. It's got a bit of fern and some beautiful leaves. And how do you stick it to the window, though?
Spray bottle of water. So that was so much fun. It's one of my favourite activities in the book. So maybe it's really good therapy for adults as well. Art therapy, nature art therapy. So it's a spray bottle of water. All kids love playing with a spray bottle of water. And then you gather your petals and your leaves, spritz your window, and then you just stick them on. So obviously you want flowers that are quite light, but again, if we're talking about learning about fine motor skills and physics and things like that, all incidentally, because it's boring to talk about all that stuff to kids, they know that they could break a camellia up into lots of little petals. And then put them on the window. So there's lots to learn within that. And I left mine for ages and it just still looked really pretty. I did have to scrape them off and it did take a lot of work. I wanted to ask
whether that was an issue. The eggheads look like fun. Let's get on to some of the bigger stuff for the older kids. I love the vine hideout.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep. And that really resonated with my 12-year-old.
Because it ends up like it's a vine structure turned into almost like a teepee, but then it's covered in all these beautiful leaves and it actually is a little hideaway.
Yeah, yeah. It's, and, you know, my kids, we've always gone camping at a place up north where there's a kind of a natural bivouac cupboard in Moolenbeekia that they return to. Kids really like places that they can go on their own. And so this activity's cool because you can either grow, you make your teepee form, and you can either grow like sweet peas or beans up it, or you can find vines and just string them on top, like a kind of a bivouac, and then make this cool little hidey place. And, you know, I've got a rug in mine and cushions and a book. And we had that in our garden for quite a long time.
The final thing we'll talk about perhaps is some of the fashion. And look, people would love this. You can make really fancy leaf and petal masks. That looks quite complicated. How does that structure hold together?
Well, what the easiest way to do this is to buy, you know, you can buy plain masks at, you know, like party shops or places like Spotlight. Or you could always cut out your own. And then you get PVA, or you can make a glue out of flour and water, and then you just arrange your flowers and petals and glue them on.
Lots of pretty little wristlets and everything else, bracelets and everything else as well. Lots and lots of fun. As you said, that it's almost overlapping. It is overlapping with crafts, really. It's being in the outdoors, but it's introducing some fine motor skills in a fun way as well. How do you know which ones really resonate with kids? Did you trial some of these?
Yeah, I did. So when I took the photos for the book, I had quite a few naturecraft parties, which was one of the most fun and joyous moments of making the book, really. So it was good to see what kids engage with. So younger kids really like the nature paintbrushes. There's a really cool activity, which is great, you know, if you really need to get your kids outdoors. It's nature wristbands. You get a piece of double-sided tape or just a big thick bit of tape, and you tape it around the child's hands so the sticky bit is on the outside. Then you go for a wander and you forage for leaves and petals and maybe some little pebbles, and they stick them on as they go and kind of create a pattern. So the kids love that, and they really like all putting their wrists together, you know, and comparing what they've done. So that's a really fun activity. And I mean, the thing is too that these activities are starting points. So I mean, you might start with an activity outside. You might have, you know, like I've done some frozen ice ornaments, or where you've taken cake molds and put petals in them and frozen them with water in the freezer, and then you can take those outside. So you could start with that, and then kids can start making mud pies, or they might wait for it all to melt, and then perhaps they can make some kind of fairy soup. So child-led play, you know, is where we're kind of really developing our imaginations and sense of agency. And that's, you know, that's part of kids experimenting and being outside and really just developing that joy for being in the outdoor world.
School holidays not too far away. What are some of the other fun things? There's the bug hotels.
A bug hotel is a great project for the school holidays because you can kind of, you don't want things that are too quick always in the school holidays. Bug hotels are great too because they really teach kids about the ecosystem within their backyards. So for a bug hotel, you want to collect a whole lot of different materials. So you can take your kids for a walk, find some pine cones, look in your fire heap. Everyone's got bugs in their fire heap, but you want your firewood. Bamboo's great. Anything hollow. So I've used like hollow dahlia stems and stuffed them into a flower pot. And then you stack it all together, wait for the bugs to move in, and I guarantee something will live in there. I have invasive black Australian lizards in mine, and the blackbirds come around and try and eat them. So it's totally an example of the ecosystem at work.
Look, very good. It probably explains why there's so many kids in your acknowledgements, the fact that you've trialled some of these out.
Oh, good, you're playing it. I'm stoked. Thank you, Catherine.
Where are we going to get to the main bit, though? We might have to sing it, Rachel.
Underground, overground, wumbling breed. The wombles of Wimbledon, common are we. Making good use of the things that we find. Things that the everyday folks leave behind. Uncle Bulgaria.
I've forgotten the wombles. I'm going to go now, I have to go on YouTube and find a whole bunch of old Wombles episodes. Thank you, Rachel Clare. The book is called Naturecraft Projects for Tamariki. It's by Bateman Books.